Coming up on Boston Public Radio, the Defense of Marriage Act, unconstitutional. A gay marriage ban in California, apparently no more. Aaron Hernandez in handcuffs, apparently a patriot no more. Oh, and yes, almost forgot, Ed Markey is the senator-elect from Massachusetts. We'll discuss all of that on what is as busy a news day as a June 26th can get. Marjorie?
Brian McGrory, editor of the Boston Globe, joins us to talk Supreme Court decision on gay marriage and yesterday's flop of a Senate race. Then Garen Daly joins us to talk fun summer vacation movies. Fun. All that's coming up on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. A rather big news day today, Jim.
I would say. As you just heard, history was made today. In its first ever decision regarding gay marriage, Supreme Court declared unconstitutional a federal law signed by Bill Clinton, by the way, defining marriage for federal benefits purposes as between a man and a woman, then by a similar 5-4 margin on procedural grounds allowed gay marriage to stand in California. Here to unravel all this with us is Noah Feldman. He's the Bemis Professor of Law at Harvard University. His latest book is Cool War, The Future of Global Competition. Welcome back, Noah Feldman.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, Professor Feldman. So let's start with the Defense of Marriage Act. What happened with the Supreme Court today? Explain what this ruling did and didn't do.
The Supreme Court said that this law, which particularly said that the federal government would not recognize gay marriage, even where the state recognized it, was unconstitutional. The court said that that violated what it called the equal dignity of same-sex marriage. And so that's really a huge landmark decision that says that in the future, if you're married, for example, in Massachusetts to a person of the same sex, you will have all federal benefits that come with that: tax benefits, visiting a person in a hospital benefits, and indeed very possibly immigration benefits as well. In fact, I think that's almost certain.
And we should also say, critically, what it didn't do. For the states, 38 states, I think it is, which don't recognize gay marriage, that has no impact whatsoever. Essentially, all it does is have an effect on the 12 states in D.C. which do recognize gay marriage. Correct, Professor?
That's true of the holding, although it's possible that its implications will go further in future cases. So you're absolutely right that today the court did not say that those other states have to recognize same-sex marriages, and it also did not say that they have to allow their own citizens to marry people of the same sex.
Right, but that provision in DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, was not challenged before the Supreme Court, at least within the confines of the Defense of Marriage Act, correct?
That's correct. It was not raised in this case. On the other hand, the language of the equal dignity of marriage that it used and the statement that the Constitution prohibits the federal government from violating that equal dignity raises at least the implication, and this will certainly be argued in the courts, I'm sure, starting tomorrow, that states must recognize the equal dignity of marriage of citizens who are married in other states.
But no, Feldman, we've got to put you on hold for 1 second. We're joined on the phone by a woman who I have a feeling agrees with your thesis of a couple of seconds ago. She led the first state challenge, a successful one, to the Defense of Marriage Act in 2009, when a U.S. district court struck it down in 2010 as unconstitutional. She's the Attorney General of the Commonwealth. Martha Coakley, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to both of you.
Good afternoon, Attorney General Coakley. You know, it occurred to me, we were talking about this earlier, that this started in Massachusetts. We had Margaret Marshall in the Massachusetts Supreme Court here. We had Mary Bonanno arguing the case before her. And then we had you, all women, coincidentally, I guess.
Yes. But maybe not so coincidentally.
Maybe not so coincidentally. And you were in the court when DOMA was argued. What did you think this was going to happen the way it happened?
I am not surprised. I'm very pleased, by the way, and thrilled at this. And I think we weren't alone, particularly given the questioning. You know, we were interested to see that a lot of the questions that come out when you read this decision were based upon our case and the amicus that we filed. Because keep in mind, the New York case did not involve the state of New York. It involved two people and their tax situation. Right result. But I do think that both our case, talking about the role Massachusetts had to play in having a two-tier set of marriages, having a second-class marriage, and the 1,000 or more kinds of distinctions that got made across the state, not just for the two individuals in the Windsor case, and then with the other states and the amicus that were filed, the business community, so many people just weighed in and said, you know, this is not fair. And by the way, there's no real purpose for DOMA other than to discriminate.
Hey,
you can see the threads of that in the decision that Justice Kennedy wrote.
Martha Coley, did you happen to hear what Professor Feldman said right before we went to you about the while not a touching in this DOMA decision whether the states which don't have gay marriage have to recognize it, the fact that they said the federal government has to treat all people with, quote, equal dignity will have implications starting tomorrow. I assume you agree with that thesis,
right? I think
right?
That's right. And I think that the arguments put forward in this decision around equal protection and the need to recognize people's dignity is really the argument we've always made, that this is not about just what a state can do and the federal government can't interfere. This is about a state like Massachusetts that wanted to enlarge civil liberties, wanted to move forward on it, and the last thing the federal government should be doing would be to interfere with those liberties. That doesn't mean, and I think that the professor is right, that as we've seen the change across the country, we've seen how people are understanding that this is about families, it's about responsibility, that there is a push now that this decision is putting us closer to what I hope we will see across the country, which is fairness for everybody.
Hey, Martha Coakley, congratulations, the Attorney General of the Commonwealth. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations, Attorney General.
Now let's go back to Noah Feldman. As I said, he's a law professor at Harvard. Professor Feldman, continue with your thought for a second, because we have to include in this conversation on Proposition 8, the ballot question, which banned gay marriage. Essentially, what the court said on procedural grounds, so-called standing grounds, the people who challenged it didn't have standing. So the gay marriage law, the decision in the lower court, stands, correct? Is that a correct statement?
More or less. What happened?
Give me the less.
The people who challenged it were fine. Those were the couples who wanted to get married in California, the same-sex couples. What happened is that they won in the first court, the district court, and then the state of California said, we're glad they won, so we're not going to defend the law anymore. Mm. That left nobody to defend the law except for a group of people who had sponsored the ballot initiative in the first place. And the court said that those people lacked the standing or the authority to appear in court and say, uphold this law. And therefore, the court said, we're not going to address the question of whether this law is constitutional or not. And therefore, the original opinion before the district court remains in place. That was the opinion that struck down the law as unconstitutional.
Okay, so you, based upon that and based upon what you said, the implications of the decision in the DOMA case, Defense of Marriage Act case, are what is the case? Create the hypothetical case that gets back to the Supreme Court that doesn't allow them to avoid the issue on procedural grounds.
Well, one way in which it's going to arise is that couples are going to say, I married in Massachusetts, and now I've moved to Pennsylvania, and I want Pennsylvania to recognize my marriage. And let's say Pennsylvania says, no, we won't. The courts will eventually have to decide whether that does or doesn't respect the equal dignity of that marriage that was performed lawfully in Massachusetts, and which is also simultaneously respected by the federal government, right? Because that couple presumably would be married in front of the federal government even when they lived in Pennsylvania, so they'd be paying federal income tax, for example, as a married couple, and yet not state income tax as a married couple. It's going to be very, very complicated and messy. Another way it could arise is that a couple in a state that doesn't allow same-sex marriage could simply sue that state again, as has happened in the past, and say, look, we're entitled to the equal dignity of marriage. You have to let us get married. That case could also go up and eventually make its way to the Supreme Court. So those are scenarios where it could happen. It's definitely coming.
Before you go, one thing that I found so strange, the breakdown of the 5-4 on the Defense of Marriage Act decision was one that I think a lot of people could have predicted. But
yep.
The majority in the case which allowed gay marriage to stand in California includes, on one hand, Chief Justice Roberts, a conservative, and Antonin Scalia,
yep,
clearly a conservative, and then
yep,
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, and Elena Kagan, obviously,
three
liberally. What's that about?
Well, here's my theory, and of course, it's just a theory because we don't know what they were thinking themselves. If Justice Kennedy had been willing to write an opinion in the Prop 8 case saying everyone has a right to be married to whomever they choose, no matter where they might be, the liberals who joined him in the DOMA case would certainly have joined him. So that means that Kennedy was not willing to do that. Kennedy must have said in conference, look, I'm there on DOMA, but I'm not there on Prop 8. I want to do something short of that. At that point, the liberals who joined the Chief Justice, that is to say Breyer, Kagan, and Ginsburg, must have believed that it was better for the country to be silent on the Prop 8 case than to get some holding that fell short of a full acknowledgement of gay marriage. And therefore, they decided, they must have said, we're going to vote not to hear this case at all. At that point, Chief Justice Roberts, who likes judicial restraint more than anyone else on the court, said, look, great, I'll write an opinion that says judicial restraint. We can't, don't have the authority to hear this case. And last but not least, Justice Scalia, who's the fifth member of that group, who believes that the courts should have nothing to say about any of these issues, should just shut up and stand aside, would have been glad to join the opinion. And my guess, it's obviously just a guess, is that that's how it happened.
One last guess before you go away, Professor Feldman. It's 2013. What's the year in which the Supreme Court of the United States declares that there shall be no marriage discrimination in all 50 states in D.C.?
I think we're 3 to 5 years away from that now, given the next set of cycles that we're going to see. But I think it's very probable, indeed nearly certain, that it will happen eventually.
Noah Professor Feldman, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much for being with us. We have been talking with Noah Feldman. He is the Bemis Professor of Law at Harvard University, and his latest book is Cool War, The Future of Global Competition. Again, Professor Feldman, thank you very much.
Now, here with us in Studio 3 to go over the political implications of these Supreme Court rulings, and remember there was an election last night, to discuss those results are political analysts Dan Payne and Todd Domke. Dan Payne is president of Payne and Company, who's a media advisor to the Markey campaign. Welcome and congratulations, Dan.
Thank you, Jim.
And Todd Domke, another creative namer of his firm, is a principal at Todd Domke and Associates. He's a Republican analyst. How are you, Todd Domke?
Good to be with you.
Hey, Todd. I'm dying to ask you, as a Republican analyst, you know a lot about, obviously, politics. The Supreme Court now has said, Defense of Marriage Act, we can't say just a man and a woman anymore. It's done. So what does this mean for the National Party? What does this mean for the presidential primaries? What do you think?
Well, it's bad news for the National Republican Party. There's a schism in the party over this issue. There's more of the religious right kind of opposition to gay rights. And then there are many pragmatic Republicans who realize that if they're on the wrong side of history,
right,
that just in terms of generations, you know, you're turning off, you know, most people under 50. And that's not to say that many older people haven't come around to support gay marriage. They have. But it does mean that politically in swing states and even in some conservative areas, it's a bad position for a Republican to be on the defensive for being against equal rights in marriage.
So do you see in the presidential primaries, I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but, you know, I'm dying to, because there are so many social
right.
issues that have stymied the Republican Party.
Right.
Do you see in the presidential primary somebody really getting those votes from the people that say, well, I don't like this kind of gay marriage stuff. I'm opposed to this whole thing. However, we want to get a Republican, and I'm going to throw my principles out the window and vote for a pragmatist?
Well, I think they're, you know, in like the field last time in the Republican primary, there were so many candidates that if a candidate like Huntsman or whatever had the more moderate position really ran as a moderate, he could have won as a plurality. But instead, he kind of tried to have it both ways, sounding
yeah.
a little moderate, and yet really I'm conservative, I'm a, whatever. So in this case, Chris Christie or who knows, some other moderate Republicans might be able to, you know, win a lot of primaries with 40% or whatever if they ran someone who, you know, was not so anti-majority views on social issues.
Now, Dan Payne, the assumption based on what your Republican friend said is Democrats will be jubilant. I should say Dan Payne is wearing Bermuda shorts and Hawaiian shirt.
An authentic Hawaiian shirt.
An authentic Hawaiian
from
shirt.
From Hawaii.
Is that really true?
Absolutely.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
Now, at the same time, the impression one would get listening to Todd is the Democrats are jubilant. This is their issue, one of their issues. But at the same time, it's like everything else. There are people running for the Senate who are not in states that are particularly fond of the notion of people of same sex getting married. So how heavily does the Democratic Party nationally embrace this drive off DOMA and off the Prop 8 decision to say it's time for marriage equality in all 50 states?
Well, I think prior to primaries, as Todd was discussing, Democrats will laud the decision and will criticize the Republican Party for being on the wrong side of history on gay rights, generally speaking, and on immigration, and on other social issues, overtly religious behavior that men in the Republican Party seem to enjoy expressing. This is putting the party at a great disadvantage nationally. In some states,
the Republican Party or the Democratic Party?
The Republican Party is at a disadvantage because of these national positions that male candidates representing the Republicans have imposed on their colleagues.
But there are 30 states, I think it's 30 states, where the voters have improved constitutional amendments to ban gay marriage. Now, in all fairness, a lot of those were prior to this flip in the polls. But the assumption is that in a decent number of those states, maybe a majority, maybe a bare minority, there's still majority opposition to gay marriage. So how does the Democratic Party play that?
Well, you know, this is changing so rapidly.
Public opinion on gay marriage.
Yeah, and expressed opinion by politicians and business people and others who are saying, you know, for marketing reasons, that they really want gay rights to be fully established in this country. And so I think there will be states where they'll hang on to their no gay rights agenda. But by and large, the country is moving so quickly in the direction of giving gay rights to Americans, and I think it's only a matter of time before a majority of the states in the country will have laws that allow that.
Go ahead, Todd.
It's very unusual that we've seen this basic a change in attitudes and public opinion, not just through polls but in voting. In such a relatively short period of time. And
in the last year, by the way, six states, we've doubled the number of states with gay marriage, three of them by legislative vote, three of them by popular vote.
It's been unbelievable, so much faster than civil rights or women's rights or anything else.
That's right. And partly, you know, it's the media, culture, and everything else where people, you know, they see shows like Modern Family or whatever and feel like, oh, I didn't know gays before, but now I see.
Exactly.
But also, you have to understand that a lot of the opposition to it has, even though many people who were opposed before might still have the preference, yes, let's not call it gay marriage, let's call it civil unions or something. But underneath that, there's more acceptance, you know, or resignation, thinking, okay, this is happening. So there's less, you know, energy on that side. So they're kind of giving up.
And it doesn't even have to happen in your state in order for the problem to exert its influence on the Republican Party. I mean, there were Republican men in other states who said crazy things during the last campaign that hurt, I think, Romney for sure, and candidates in other states.
You hear about things like rape and abortion, those kinds of things.
I mean, they really had primitive positions on abortion.
But we should understand why it hurt Mitt Romney so much. It's because he didn't seem to speak with conviction about
anything,
these issues.
Yeah.
Right. So therefore, you know, he could – and he continued to try to mollify his base, at the same time trying to appeal to moderates, and he tried to be all things to all people.
That's the voice of Todd Domke, Republican analyst. The other guy is Dan Payne. He's a Democratic analyst, and he was the media guy for Ed Markey.
But I didn't do the TV spot.
No,
he's
not.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
We're going to talk about the Senate race in just a couple of minutes. But, you know, my theory is about the whole gay rights thing. It's just what you said, that so many people came out. There was even talk about how clerks, some of the Supreme Court justices were saying, well, I don't know any gay people. And then it turns out that their clerks had been gay. They didn't even know that they were gay. And so everybody, not everybody, but lots of people are out of the closet now, so everybody knows somebody gay. If everyone that had an abortion in America came out of the closet, then we would have not what went on in Texas yesterday with this filibuster for 12 hours. She's my new hero, the state senator.
Wendy, what's her name?
Davis, I think her last name is. Yeah. But the point is, it's knowing someone and realizing that person is not some horrible person that changes everyone's opinion.
And also the logic of the arguments that, yes, why should they be denied federal benefits when it's a civil union is the equivalent to marriage?
Hey,
and then it becomes semantics.
We only have a minute left, and I don't want to pile on you, Todd Domke, as the Republican here, but let me do it just for one more second if I can. It seems to me the voting rights decision was bad news for the Republican Party yesterday, too. And here's my thesis. Since Mitt Romney lost 70-29 amongst Hispanics, The Marco Rubios and others have worked really hard to be part of this immigration reform thing so the Republicans can say we care about responsible immigration too. But when you read 2 hours after the Supreme Court decision, the Texas Attorney General refiles a measure with voter identification and other things that the Justice Department and federal courts had determined to be discriminatory against minorities, including Latinos in Texas, that puts the Republicans in a real tough spot on the critical constituency for survival, does it not?
Yes.
Thank you. And that note, Todd Domkin. Yeah, what do you want to say?
Oh, I was just going to say the Republican Party runs the risk of looking like a party of intolerance on gay rights, on abortion, on immigration. These are risky positions for them.
I cannot tolerate Dan saying that.
You are intolerant.
He is Todd Domke. The other one is Dan Payne, and they are not going away.
And no, we're going to be talking about the political race locally, the Senate race between Ed Markey and Gabriel Gomez, which ended last night with a victorious Congressman Ed Markey. When we return, stay tuned to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
This week on Innovation Hub, a frank discussion about why college may need to undergo a reinvention.
If you take a gorilla and have a gorilla press random keys on that test, the gorilla does better than some of my Harvard students.
I'm Kara Miller. In a special live Innovation Hub, we ask educational pioneers what's in store for college and whether the decade ahead might be the one when everything changes. Thursday night at 9 here on 89.7 WGBH.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Stonebridge at Burlington, who believe assisted living should provide choices such as art classes, a full-service spa, and a cafe. If you agree seniors deserve to live well and love life, you can find Stonebridge at nextgenerationseniors.com. And Scott and Bailey, one is argumentative, the other a true diplomat. Together, these women solve Britain's most difficult crimes while battling personal demons. Scott and Bailey, Wednesday at 10 on WGBH 44.
Think about the best thing you heard on public radio this year. Maybe you heard a report.
She's been the general manager of the MBTA, Beverly,
who was interviewing someone.
It's a pleasure, absolutely.
There was probably also a producer in the next room calling the shots.
We've got our next guest on the line.
And an engineer running the board.
Can I get a mic check, please?
Sounds good. There's a whole staff of people doing research, taking care of the details, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and the folks up at Great Blue Hill making sure the antenna works. And last, but certainly not least, there's a community of listeners all across New England.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
And beyond.
Hello.
In other words, no one does public radio alone. And in that spirit, right now, other WGBH supporters are agreeing to match your gift in any amount, dollar for dollar, but only for a limited time. So please call 888-897-9424. The match also works when you give online at WGBHnews.org.
Let me say them both again in case you didn't write them down. It's 888-897-9424. You can give online at WGBHnews.org. This is day three of WGBH's most important fundraiser of the entire year. WGBH's fiscal year ends in, I think, 4 days on June 30th. That means there's even less time than usual to cover costs for the programs you love. But here's the thing. WGBH cannot happen without you, period. And there's a very special incentive for you to give right now. With more, here's producer Kim Saltmarsh. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Jim. Thank you guys for being allowing me to come on.
Thrilled to be here. Hi, Kim.
Hi. So I have to tell you, today is a very, very important day. In public broadcasting, we have these things called matches, and they're very, very rare. So right now, going on, there is a dollar-for-dollar match. So what does that mean? Well, that means everything you give, any amount, is doubled. It's like you're two people. So let's say you give $10 a month, right? That's $20 a month. All of this goes right back into the programs you love. So if you love Jim and Marjorie, if you love public broadcasting, let's say you love Morning Edition, all things considered, all of this goes right back into the programs you love. So double the impact of your gift. Here's the number again to call, 888-897-9424. You can always give online at WGBHnews.org.
And when news does happen, and this is a huge news day today, public radio takes you right to the scene. We have people at the Whitey Bulger courtroom today. We have people down in North Attleboro covering the Aaron Hernandez situation. He's a New England Patriot. He's in a little bit of hot water right now. The reporters paint a picture through words and sounds and give you information you won't find anyplace else. So even when you are not there, you are there.
But to get there, WGBH needs you. So consider being part of the journey by contributing a gift in any amount. Your support means more unique storytelling from places where news breaks.
And as Kim and Marjorie said, any amount is wonderful. Any amount is matched. But if you make a gift of $100 right now, GBH can say thanks with two tickets to the Taste of WGBH Food and Wine Artisan Festival. It's a taste event taking place here at our studios on Saturday, September 21st. Here's what you get. You get to taste the best dishes from more than 15 of New England's top rated restaurants. You sample fine wines from all over the world. You meet celebrity chefs, some people from WGBH. Tickets are extremely limited, though, so we urge you to call now. It's 888-897-9424. Or secure your tickets online at WGBHnews.org, Kim.
So I went to that event last year, and it was fantastic. What's really cool is that you're getting tickets to go to this event, and you're supporting the programs that you love. So this is really a win-win. Just a reminder, we're looking to hear from 80 people by 2 p.m. We can definitely get there. So many incentives for you to give right now. That dollar-for-dollar match. It's a very practical time to give. If you're thinking about giving, why would you not take advantage of this? It's so practical. You're like two people. It's like you're giving twice, but you're really only giving once. It's a great deal. So you've got the dollar-for-dollar match. Also, every person who gives today in any amount is going to be entered to win that trip for two to Europe. So it's two people. You can pick from four European destinations, Rome, London, Paris, or Istanbul, courtesy of PBS travel guru Rick Steves. He's actually going to call you up and say, hey, let's plan your trip. Really? I would like a phone call with Rick. Kind of cool. You can choose from a bunch of thank you gifts. You just heard Jim talk about that food and wine festival. But most importantly, and this is the real reason we give, is that you are supporting Jim and Marjorie. You're supporting talk radio. You're supporting public broadcasting. Make that call. Double the impact of your gift. It's the practical choice today. 888-897-9424. You can always give online at WGBHnews.org.
And you know what else you get, by the way, which we all forgot?
What's that?
No commercials, Marjorie.
No commercials. Yes. That is very
remember
important.
Those?
Okay, here is the number and the website again. It's 888-897-9424 or online. You can give securely at WGBHnews.org. That's WGBHnews.org, and have your gift doubled. WGBH needs your help to stay on track. Remember, this is the most important fundraiser of the year for Boston Public Radio. The fiscal year ends June 30th. It's a couple of days away from now. But most importantly, you give, you'll be ensuring that live local talk always has a home on Boston's airwaves. Again, 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org. And thanks.
These are historic times in the U.S. Congress. Partisan bickering and gridlock are at an all-time high, while some of the most significant legislation to be debated in decades is being considered. Immigration reform, gun control, the sequester, a nearly $4 trillion budget. Just taking small steps forward can seem like a challenge at times, but there's one thing you can do today that can have a big impact. You can make or renew your financial support of this public radio station. It doesn't take much. You can do it right away. And once you do, the positive effect is immediate. Your station counts on your contribution to pay for the news you've come to depend on. So please, make or renew your investment in public radio today. And thanks.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. And we are rejoined by Dan Payne. He's the president of Payne & Company. He's a Democrat. He was the media advisor to the Markey campaign. Todd Domke is a Republican. He's the principal of Todd Domke & Associates. Before we discuss the race, you went out of your way a minute ago. Was this out of respect or what was it to say you were the media advisor, but you did not do the commercials? What should we draw from that statement?
That I am not responsible for the Markey commercials,
okay.
Which were overwhelmingly negative.
They were overwhelmingly negative. You are right about
that. And overwhelmingly mediocre.
Well, you can say that.
I just did.
Well, thank you both.
Dan Payne, Jim Browdy has been complaining for days now about the people who weren't turning out, 27% voter turnout all statewide, according to the Globe today, and there wasn't a lot of excitement. So was it voter fatigue, or were these candidates, including Ed Markey, not as inspiring and scintillating as we hoped for? Why was there so little interest in this race?
Well, it was the heat.
The heat.
It was the Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
It was Whitey.
Yeah.
It was Aaron Hernandez.
This is pathetic. It really
I know
is
you
pathetic.
Don't want you don't
pathetic.
Want to hear that.
You can say whatever you want.
No, but here's what Winston Churchill once said. Whatever is wrong with democracy, The best way to improve it is more democracy. You're letting the voters off the hook if you think that candidates have to entertain them. Mm-hmm. Voters have a responsibility to be informed, to not just register, but actually pay attention to what's going on in the campaign.
I agree with that. But if they paid attention, and many did, they were turned off and didn't feel the motivation to go out and vote for it. I've talked with people who I was surprised, who usually vote, did not vote.
What did they say? What was their excuse?
Well, it was like, well, I just didn't get to it. I mean, basically, they just weren't moved by it. They didn't say that. But in each case, when I talked to them, I was surprised because they vote in every election generally. I was a couple blocks away. Yeah, I didn't get to it. Oh, I forgot. I mean, they were not turned on by the candidates. The candidates turned them off. And I agree that it's still voters have a duty to vote if they are informed and if they care and all the rest.
Yeah.
But the campaigns were terrible. Both campaigns that helped turn off. So I would
you're
say
50% right.
I agree with Churchill, but I would say what they gave us was less democracy. I would say the media also are culprits in there was less coverage. You know, and it wasn't just those incidents. Just because Whitey Bulger is having a trial doesn't mean people
can't vote.
It crowds out the news hole.
What do we make of the 10-point spread, though? I thought, considering that Gomez did struggle and in some of these debates, and I think he struggled with his message. And, Marky, I heard mostly about guns and abortion, even though I thought those weren't the big issues that we're voting on. But in any case, what do you make of that 10%? I think that's pretty good for Gomez.
I think it's pretty predictable. I mean, pretty much you look back to other Senate races, and that pretty much is conventional.
Inside the Markey campaign, we wanted, in the worst way, to get 10 points, to get a double-digit win. So it'll discourage other people from thinking about running next time, like Bill Weld.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Brown.
Scott Brown possibly might want to claim a Senate seat again if he's bored in the private sector.
In New Hampshire. He probably
in New Hampshire, right. Yeah. If they don't like him, he'll come back here. And possibly other Republicans who believe that, you know, they could have done a better job than Gomez given the amount of money. Gomez spent not that much money. He should have signed the People's Pledge.
That's the ultimate irony. The failure of the People's Pledge to be signed by Gomez ended up helping your guy, who wanted the People's Pledge.
And he got much more outside money than Gomez.
That was my point.
Didn't matter. The money didn't matter. The messaging on both sides and the organization and the coverage, the money didn't matter.
Okay, Todd, forget it. Let's talk messaging.
The ads were ineffective
on both sides. Here's my thesis that I've said to virtually every Republican in the studio in the last month or two. My thesis is I don't care how charismatic, how brilliant a candidate you are on the Republican side. If you're pro-life and you're anti-assault weapons ban, you cannot win a statewide election in Massachusetts. Is that a fair statement?
I would say those issues hurt them, yes. But also,
It hurt him. I mean, can you imagine?
Well, the problem is broader than that, but you're right. Those two issues hurt. But here's the thing. The Republican Party has become the Romney Party in this state. That's the problem. Romney handlers guiding these people. It's the same stupidity. You know, it's this simple-minded message, which is basically about the person, and as the other person's been in office too long, and it's just amorphous, and they have nothing to say about issues.
By the way, this is the Republican consultant speaking. That's Todd Donkey.
No, I'm not going to say anything.
The Republican Party is practically defunct now because it's been in this downward spiral since Romney, and there's
no
chance
of
change.
Tell us the better future. What does the Republican Party do starting today? What do they do? In Massachusetts.
If someone wants to beat a Democrat, run as an independent in this state.
Really?
Yeah, you know something? You're the second person that said that in 2 days. Somebody said it yesterday. I forgot who it was. You know, but there were other – you know, I thought Dan Winslow was the best candidate of the three.
Dan Winslow was the most electable in a general
election.
He came
in a distant third.
So, in a way, shame on the Republicans in Massachusetts. They had a guy who was very talented, very smart, very funny, very clever, a moderate Republican, and they went for Gomez. And even though Gomez looked very good on paper, it didn't come together for him.
No, it didn't.
Why did the Republicans see what they had in Winslow and vote for him?
Well, I don't know. But
he didn't have any money. That was part of his problem.
Yeah, and also, he didn't really come across in the media. I saw Jim do interviews with him on television. He came across.
They were really good, weren't they?
The interviews were good. But he was so concerned about debating with you that he was more conscious of positioning himself on the issues as a lawyer, you know, in a very defensive kind of way.
I thought he won the debates.
Yes, he did. Yeah. But nobody watched the debate, so it didn't matter. So, but But this,
but Gomez here won the primary because he spent a lot of money on TV, and the other two didn't.
And he looked good on TV.
That's true.
Yeah.
But here's,
so
here's
the Republicans were seduced by a pretty face, is what you're saying.
Here's and a lot of money.
Here's the stupidity, though. And I know that Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, Republican, said the GOP has got to stop being the stupid party. Well, it didn't happen this time. The Gomez campaign publicized, advertised, promoted, and reiterated in debates this idea, I'm a new kind of Republican. Now, what is the message to the independents, to moderates out there, to disaffected Democrats? But they're hearing Republican, Republican, Republican. Now, new kind of Republican, they know, means, oh, somebody who's really trying to get elected and trying to act a little different. And, of course, he never explained it. The issues, as Jim points out, on abortion and gun rights or whatever, it never came across.
And
new
then
kind
his
of
business
Republican.
Background got questioned by Jim on his television
right, I know,
program
but
and by the Globe.
But that's right. But there's
and
no,
it's still not done. If he runs again, there's going to be more about Advent, his company.
Do you think he does run again? I mean, 10 points, is, I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of.
No,
your first run against a guy who had a lot of dough, had Bill Clinton and had Michelle Obama, had right. Barack Obama,
and did,
everybody.
He did very well in the suburbs, Gomez
did,
and not so well
in the
cities.
Traditionally Republican
yes.
suburbs.
Look, the biggest, yeah.
He didn't, there was no inroads in his vote.
Look, as pointed out, the drop from 53% turnout in the special election for Scott Brown and Coakley down to half of that.
Right.
He didn't motivate. He didn't inspire. Neither did Markey. But you're right. I mean, 10-point margin is not necessarily to be ashamed of. But it will tell other Republicans, like Charlie Baker and others, you run as a Republican in this state, you run that kind of corporate, simple-minded campaign, you're dead.
Now, excuse me, Dan Payne, the Democrat, back to you for a second. Your guy has to run for re-election in about 3 minutes. He has the new...
By the way, he's in Washington now.
Is that so?
Today, he's not making the victory tour, doing the victory lap. He's in Washington working on some legislation that he cares a lot about.
Well, you know, my suggestion last night at NECN, which I think he ignored, he should have declared for re-election last night, so it was like a twofer during the speech. But it seems to me he's got a pretty tough road to hoe on the following front. He is entering one of the most dysfunctional gridlock institutions, the United States Senate, even though it appears they may do something on immigration. He is going to have to answer questions, let's say 12, 13 months from now. Okay, you said you could change things. You said you could be bipartisan. Tell us what you've done in the 12 months since June 25th that suggests to us that you can ever get anything done. He's got to produce, does he not?
Well, he can't move the entire Senate.
No, I understand that, but he's got to produce something, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he will, because Ed knows a lot of the people who are in the Senate. That's one of his big advantages going into this next year, is that he has friends who moved from the House to the Senate. And, he's been there, as Gomez said, I think it was 37 years, that he
said it 25 times.
37 years? I thought that's how long the campaign was.
Yeah. A friend of mine tweeted last night, 37 more years was her slogan, which I thought was really great. So let's look to the future. There are two huge races next November. There's a gubernatorial race without an incumbent, and there's a Senate race with an incumbent, assuming Ed Markey decides to run. And again, give me the list, Todd Domke, of the two or three Republicans who you think are likely to enter the fray. Who are those people?
Which office?
For either of them. Is it Bill Weld? Give me an office and a name. Scott Brown, Bill Weld, Charlie Baker. Who runs for what? Anybody?
I think Scott Brown does not run here, maybe in New Hampshire. I mean, he wouldn't be going to Fox News.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't think so.
They did a poll. They asked people in New Hampshire, and he got roundly, rejected.
Yeah, well, I don't think he'd be doing that well here either. And I think Charlie
Baker.
You're
a natter and nabob of negativism if there ever was one.
This is why.
Okay, who in the Republican?
How about Charlie Baker running for governor?
He could run, but I don't think. I don't think he. Again, we need a populist reformer type to take
who
on
is
the
that?
Democratic
one
party.
Is there such a person?
We don't need somebody who sounds like a CFO.
So who's the person? Who is that person in the Republican Party? Is there one?
I think the party is still looking.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe Stephen Lynch should become a Republican. What do you think?
Well, like I said, for Republicans or for people who want to take on a liberal Democratic establishment type figure, keep in mind, 52% independent in this state, 12% Republican.
Right.
What do you want to run as?
Yeah. That's a very good point, Todd Domkin.
Well, I'd just like to say to both of you, Todd Domkin and Dan Payne, that was the most depressing 15 minutes I've ever had in my life. Oh. Thank you both.
Glad to be part of it.
But by the way, you do look fetching in the real Hawaiian.
Can I be on your TV show and wear this?
Dan Payne and Todd Domkin, great to see you both. And congratulations on the marquee victory, Dan.
Thank you.
Dan Payne is president of Payne & Company. Todd Domkin is a principal at Todd Domkin & Associates. Thanks, you guys, for being with us. Up next, we're going to ask you what you think about all this. We want your take on the landmark Supreme Court rulings on gay marriage. We are at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Voting rights, gay rights, bad day for democracy, good day for democracy. Again, 877-301-8970.
A new television show is catching buzz for the sexy and scandalous storylines.
Keep your friends close, but your maids closer.
But it's also sparking debate. Does devious maids perpetuate stereotypes or just give Latina actresses some shine? The Beauty Shop ladies weigh in next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
We love our contributors. That means you. And the South Shore Music Circus in Cohasset, presenting Garrison Keillor's A Prairie Home Companion Radio Romance Tour 2013 on July 26th. And the Tenors lead with your heart on August 24th. Tickets and info at themusiccircus.org. And Subaru of New England, introducing the all-new redesigned Subaru Forester with all-wheel drive. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. More information available online at subaruofnewengland.com.
Ever have one of those days where you had so much to do, you kind of wish there were two of you? Well, on Boston Public Radio, your wish has been granted, because when you support WGBH right now, other supporters will double the impact of your gift. There's a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. That means your gift of $10 a month becomes $20, your $100 gift becomes $200, and so on and so on. But it won't last long, so take advantage of this match and call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at wgbhnews.org.
That is right. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org. This week, Jim and I are taking the time to ask you to pitch in and help keep live local talk alive on Boston's airwaves. Jim and I are live and local, just by the way. You can support Boston Public Radio with a gift in any amount. I am Marjorie Eakin. Good afternoon. With us in studio today is Kim Saltmarsh from the Membership Department to tell us about what right now is a particularly special time to give. How come, Kim?
It really, really is. And that's because we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. So sometimes people say who aren't super familiar with public radio, well, what is that? Well, a dollar-for-dollar match, whatever you give, any gift in any amount, is going to be doubled. So it's as if you're two people. These matches are very, very coveted in public broadcasting. You don't hear about them that often. This one is for a very, very limited time. It's just for this afternoon, just for right now, so you really want to take advantage of it. Some people have been calling in. They have been taking advantage of it, but we still need to hear from you. We're not at our goal. So, again, a dollar-for-dollar match is in effect right now. It's very, very practical. $20 a month will become $40. Let's say you decide, hey, it's a big time of year. Let me just give a $200 gift. That's actually $400. So now is the time to take advantage of it. You call 888-897-9424, or you can always give online. The match works there, too, at wgbhnews.org.
I have to tell you, this also means a lot. Your giving, your pledging means a lot to Marjorie and me and the whole station. And if you support Boston Public Radio with a gift in any amount, by the way, beyond it being doubled, you're entered to win a trip for two to Europe, personally planned for you by, I think, the guy who is the best in the business, PBS travel guru Rick Steves. You can pick the city. You have four choices: Rome, Paris, London, Istanbul. You spend 7 days. You explore museums. You enjoy fine cuisine. You make memories that last a lifetime. Here's the part that I think is incredible, at least to me, is huge. Rick Steves will call you at home to help you set up the trip. I am a total Rick Stevesophile. He is the best in the business. He's got exactly the right deal. You make that call now, and you'll be entered to win any amount of a pledge, 888-897-9424, or enter to win when you give online at wgbhnews.org. And by the way, if Rick Steves call you at home, give him my number, too. Let him give me a buzz. I'd love to. I really would love to say hi.
So here's the deal. When you support Boston Public Radio with a $100 gift of support right now, WGBH will say thanks with two tickets to this fantastic event, the WGBH Craft Beer Festival. It's Saturday, July 13th from 6 to 10 at these WGBH studios in Brighton. And if you haven't been there, this is one spectacular building. Here's what you get. Samples of all kinds of brews from Boston Beer Works and Slum Brew and Pretty Things and many, many more. You get to sample all those different beers. Plus, there's live music on the main stage. There's presentations from some of Boston's best brewmasters and some of the best food trucks in town. Unbelievable. And plus, you will be brewing up, get it, more great programs by supporting Boston Public Radio. Here's the number and website again, 888-897-9424, or give securely online, wgbhnews.org.
That was a good pun there. Okay.
I thought so.
I liked it. It was just on the spot like that. It was so good. So again, so many incentives. Let's go through them. There is that dollar-for-dollar match in effect today. It's not going to last long, so you want to take advantage of it because your gift is going to be doubled. If you're going to give, you might as well give now and have it go twice as far. Again, anybody who enters today is going to be entered to win that trip with Rick Steves. He's got to call you up, help you plan it out. You can pick one of four destinations, Rome, London, Paris, or Istanbul. Again, courtesy of PBS travel guru Rick Steves. Bunch of thank you gifts like that craft beer festival Marjorie was just telling you about. And most importantly, whatever you give goes right back into the programming you love. If you love Jim and Marjorie, if you love Morning Edition, All Things Considered, if you believe in public broadcasting, this doesn't happen without you, so stand up for it. Here's how you can. You call 888-897-9424, or you can give online at wgbhnews.org.
And let me add the thing I mentioned before. If you love listening to talk radio, as I know Marjorie and I have done for ages, long before we were in it, without commercial breaks, then please consider making a gift in any amount right now. Public broadcasting means fewer interruptions and more time to talk about things that matter most to you, like today. Your support, quite simply, is why Marjorie and I are on the air now. Public broadcasting is only possible when you choose to support it. So please pitch in and help keep live local talk free and available to listeners across New England with a gift in any amount whatsoever. You call 888-897-9424. Do it now before you forget. 888-897-9424. Go online at wgbhnews.org.
I'm Rick Steves. For 30 years now, my Rick Steves tours have taken thousands of people to my favorite spots all across Europe. And now I'd like to do the same for you. Make a contribution to WGBH right now, and you'll be entered to win a 7-day tour for two to your choice of Rome, Paris, London, or Istanbul. Enter by calling 888-897-9424 or online at wgbhnews.org. And I hope you make a gift to support Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy, and she is Marjorie Egan. We've spoken to a Harvard Law professor. We've spoken to the Attorney General. We've talked to a Democratic and Republican consultant about these historic, these momentous Supreme Court decisions on gay marriage, two of them today, on the Voting Rights Act yesterday. Now it's your turn at 877-301-8970. From what's your reaction? Did you expect these to be the outcomes that they were? On DOMA, as you know, if you just tuned in or if you've been asleep for the last several hours, the Defense of Marriage Act Supreme Court decided that it was unconstitutional to discriminate against people, marriages, based upon the gender of the couple. So as a result, same-sex couples can no longer be denied federal benefits, whether the tax benefits, Social Security, visitation rights. On Proposition 8 in California, the banned gay marriage, they took a walk. But by taking a walk, gay marriage stands in California. Yesterday on voting rights, a huge decision. Civil rights groups went crazy, basically saying it was gutting one of the most important pieces of civil rights legislation. What's your reaction to these decisions? What impact do you think they will have on national Democratic and Republican politics? And I also want to ask you, when we were talking to Noah Feldman from Harvard Law School, the last question we asked him was, how long do you think it'll be before the Supreme Court of the United States decides that all 50 states and the District of Columbia need to recognize same-sex marriages as constitutionally permitted and protected? And he said just 3 to 5 years. Do you buy that? Do you think it is moving as quickly as it has been to the point where we do have 50 states plus D.C. with gay marriage? 877-301-8970. Are you surprised by either of the decisions? They have to say, my powers of prediction are as bad as they come. I thought both outcomes were exactly what they would be.
Well, when you read the stories in the last few weeks about the clerks, the gay clerks that have worked for these different justices, and Antonin Scalia seemed to be, I mean, I'm not a legal scholar, but legal scholars did say he seemed to be moving a little bit upon this, and he's been a very conservative justice. I thought that
But on DOMA, he was on the wrong Defense of Marriage Act. He was in the minority. He was amongst the four people
my point is that when you see a guy that seemed to be so far away from this, and particularly someone that is so religious and so Catholic and talks about his Catholicism all the time, and even though most Catholics are in favor of gay marriage, the church itself is not, obviously, or certainly most Catholics are in favor of gay rights. You saw that times have changed dramatically, and they're not unaware of, you know, you think about this. Do you want to be in the history books, as the phrase that we've overused in the context of gay marriage and gay rights, on the wrong side of history? You can see where the train is going, and it's not going backwards. The train is going towards full rights for gay people. And I think there is one downside to DOMA, though.
What's that?
A
downside to having found it unconstitutional?
Yes.
What's that?
Well, if you are a gay couple in Massachusetts because the federal government didn't recognize your marriage, you got a break on college because you could.
What's that mean?
Because you could only apply as a single person for those federal loans.
So your income is lower.
So if one half of the marriage made $200,000, the other half made $50,000. The $50,000 person applies as the parent, and they get a good deal on college. That is the one.
My guess is most gay and lesbian couples are willing to have that go by the boards. 877-301-8970. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court? Were you surprised? How fast do you think it is until they go the whole nine yards on gay marriage? And how big an issue is this in American politics? As I said to Todd Domke, our Republican friend here, a couple of minutes ago, I think this Voting Rights Act thing is huge. Because at the same time, the Republicans are working so hard to heal the schism that was created with Latino voters, again, mm-hmm. 71 and 29, Obama over Romney, with people like Marco Rubio being part of the Gang of Eight, leading the charge on immigration reform. It seems to me that when the Voting Rights Act is gutted by the Supreme Court yesterday, Congress clearly is going to do nothing. And literally within 2 hours, Texas is reintroducing voting rules and regulations that have been rejected as discriminatory, directed at blacks and Latinos. It seems to me that whatever momentum the Republican Party thought it was getting with this immigration reform may be lost on voting rights. So I think the implications on both these fronts, vis-a-vis American presidential and Senate politics, are huge. Our number is 877-301-8970. By the way, if you just want to celebrate or mourn some of these decisions, you can do that with us, too.
Well, I think, we talked about this all the time when gay rights was happening here in Massachusetts, when it was changing, when the marriage decision was made in 2004 that enabled people to get married. We talked about, and this is not even 10 years ago, how everyone's life was going to be affected, what was this going to mean to the school children, what was this going to mean to straight people's marriages, what was this going to mean, you know, how much expensive this is going to be. And you say to yourself, what has changed? Even if you live in, as you live in Cambridge, I live in Brookline, mm-hmm. where there's an awful lot of gay couples. You see so many gay couples with kids in the schools. Nothing's changed. And I mean, that's sort of one of the great arguments that the religious right has had. Well, it's going to compromise my religion. It's going to compromise my marriage. That's clearly out by the boards. And the other thing I think is exciting to think about is that, you know, this started with Margaret Marshall. Right here in Massachusetts.
877-301-8970. Margaret Marshall, of course, was the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court that ultimately made the first decision to have gay marriage be legal in a jurisdiction. So what's your reaction to this? I have to say, I said this to you as we're sitting upstairs with our colleagues. I was really nervous this morning sitting at my desk, knowing that today was the final day of the session. The decisions had to come out on these two. This is a hugely historic day. I mean, keep in mind the history. Who was the guy who signed the Defense of Marriage Act defining marriage for federal benefits as between a man and a woman? Bill Clinton, who turned around. Who did not support gay marriage until, 6-7 months ago?
Barack Obama.
It's
been unbelievably fast. And when you look at it, compare it to women's rights or African-American rights, civil rights for black people, this has just gone so much faster. Again, it's because now everybody knows someone or has a brother or a cousin or an uncle who's gay.
Let's take a couple of calls. Ann, you're in Bedford. You are next on Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie. Hey there, Ann.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I actually just wanted to comment on something Marjorie just said, which I find amusing. I actually just got married 2.5 weeks ago to my lovely wife, Mary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it was living in the Boston area that, first of all, afforded that to us.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually getting ready to move, and we're quite happy, you know, that we're going to have federal rights, even though we're moving to a state of Virginia that doesn't currently have same-sex marriage. So it's a really interesting turn of events. But I just also wanted to comment about the student loans. As somebody that just graduated from grad school a couple of years ago, I have tremendous loans, and I'm doing income-based repayment right now. And I thought it was hilarious what Marjorie said, because that is the one downside for us, I think,
yeah,
is that now my income is going to count against us.
Well, maybe you can delay the marriage. Are you already married, Ann?
Yeah, she said 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Gosh darn it.
Yeah. No, it's a great point, because you could apply based on one half of the couple's income. So I'm sorry about that. But I would assume, Anne, you think that overall this is a great day.
Yes, we would absolutely exchange that one benefit of DOMA to everything.
Hey, Anne, don't go away for a second. I should know this. Is Virginia one of the states that has a constitutional ban on gay marriage?
Yes, I believe they
do. How do you feel about moving there? I mean, you're married here, you said, because you were lucky enough to live in a state, the first state to recognize gay marriage. Then you're celebrating a DOMA decision today. You're moving to a state where the people there, admittedly, they may feel differently because the constitutional amendment wasn't passed just yesterday. How does that feel?
That's a great question. Mary, my wife and I have commented on this a lot, because we keep going back and forth about where we want to move to. We're going to be in the D.C. area, which is, quite friendly, quite liberal.
Which, by the way, permits gay marriage. D.C. is the 13th jurisdiction, 12 states in D.C. But go ahead.
Correct. If only we could afford to live downtown. Well, but other than that, we're just going to see how it plays out. I think the fact that DOMA is repealed is going to make us, it's going to soften the blow, definitely, moving to a state like that.
And congratulations to you and Mary, and thanks
and
so much
sorry,
for the call. We appreciate it.
I'm sorry about the loans, Anne. Very sorry. Mary from Scituate, what do you think about the voting rights decision or the gay marriage and Prop 8 decision?
Well, I have a real problem with the voting rights decision. I think that was a big miss on the Supreme Court's part. But I am more interested in the DOMA Act and the California Prop 8.
Yep.
Every Sunday, I have a conversation with my father, and every time he asks me, what are the Republicans going to do? How are they going to survive? And I would really like to understand if there's any Republican leaders out there who are going to come forward and, you know, join the 21st century.
Well,
There are a few. I mean, when you think
But the question is, I mean, let's assume for the moment, we were discussing this with Todd Domke, let's assume they are ready to join the 21st century. The lesson we have learned is that if you are a moderate by Republican standards, you can't win a Republican primary. If you're a moderate by Democratic standards, you can't win a Democratic primary. So, well, I think there are plenty of open-minded Republicans who are far more tolerant on these issues. I think the lessons of the last handful of years is they get celebrated by tolerant souls and they lose elections.
But Gomez was actually somebody that had a decent message, and he seemed moderate. And in the state of Massachusetts, you would think that that would play better. Why didn't the Republicans come out and support him?
Because they considered him a traitor from the moment that the conservatives did. I think from the moment that the letter to Deval Patrick was disclosed, in which he had the audacity to praise Barack Obama, saying he had the same positions on immigration and guns, even though he stepped back from that, and praised Deval Patrick as doing a great job. Remember when he sought the interim Senate seat?
Yeah.
He was seen. You can't be nice to Democrats and get the votes of conservative Republicans. And sadly, I think the same is true on the other side, Mary. Thank you for the call.
Well,
we appreciate it.
It seems to me what they're going to have to do, and I don't know if this is going to be 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, or 50 years, Republicans are going to have to do one of these. Listen, we're the party of small government, mm-hmm, and lower taxes. And our social views, we're not going to impose our religious views, which is what most of these things are, religious views on a populace that has many different religions or non-believers and atheists. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to pull a Joe Biden or people, Ted Kennedy or other people, Mario Cuomo, the former governor of New York, that said a million years ago that he was personally pro-life. He was not going to impose his religious views on other people. Joe Biden just said the same thing. That's what the Republicans have to do. And they're going to have to smarten up about this, because they will just keep losing nationwide.
877-301-8970 is our number. We're discussing the pretty significant, I would say very significant, three Supreme Court decisions that have been rendered on voting rights and on gay marriage in the last 24 to 26 hours. Up, Peter, you're in somewhere in Massachusetts, and you're next on Boston Public Radio. Thank you for the call.
Hi there. I love your show. First-time caller, first-time contributor.
Thank you for all. Oh, we love that, too. Thank you for all three, Peter.
On my way to the polls yesterday, turned around because GBH told me that Section 5 of the Voters' Right Act had been eliminated. The Supreme Court threw it to Congress. I thought, why am I voting for anybody in the House or the Senate? Because if it's in their court, nothing's going to happen. Welcome back, Jim Crow.
Well, Peter, let me just say, first of all, Section 4, but you're right. That's okay.
I'm not the attorney, Jim.
Well, I'm barely an attorney, Peter. So, but in any case, but I'm curious to hear that because I actually don't know what Gabriel Gomez's position is on the Voting Rights Act thing, but I am quite certain that Ed Markey probably had the same position you did. So if I am right and Markey was in the right place, and let's assume for argument's sake that Gomez hadn't spoken about it, why would you not say, I want to embrace the person or people, if both of them did, who are going to try to fix the situation?
You know, I love what you said about Churchill, more democracy, bad democracy, we need more democracy.
Yeah.
But, Jim, I was so frustrated.
Yeah, I understand.
Short-sightedness of the decision, I said, Congress can't do anything. Even if I vote for the guy who leans the right way on Section 4, what good is it going to do?
Yeah, I hear you, Peter, but I have to keep hope alive to some degree. And, you know, you made a point, Peter, thanks for the call, that I wish I had made earlier today. I've been saying this for years, and I'm not alone. As important as a United States senator is, and they're hugely important as a president is, and obviously they're even more important, there is nothing more important than who presidents pick to be on the Supreme Court.
You know, it's so rarely a big issue in any of these presidential contests.
Let's assume you pick, like, the last couple of justices.
But
I think have been about
Gabriel Gomez.
Exactly. On the
litmus
test.
He said he could vote for someone that was pro-life.
So let's assume you pick somebody 50 years old. I think John Roberts, the Chief Justice, was 49 or 50. We've had justices, there's some in their 80s now. So let's assume the average lifespan in the new era, 30-plus years. That could be seven different presidents.
That's right.
So you get, Republicans come and go, Democrats come and go, and the same men and women make decisions. Look at the impact that the last 2 days have had on the lives of 350 million Americans.
I know.
That's got to be people's focus. There's no more important thing, in my opinion, Marjorie, than a president does, than who he or maybe someday she appoints to the Supreme Court. Why are you smirking at me?
Just a beautiful soliloquy.
No, but it's true. And you're right. But when was the last time? We've discussed this in our former radio lives. When was the last time that someone said, I voted because I was concerned about who John Doe or Jane Doe would pick to be on the Supreme Court?
Something you hear a lot of women that are single issues
around
talk
abortion
about that.
Issues, yeah,
and they talk about that all the time, and good for them for bringing that up all the time because it really does matter. Okay, we are moving on. Up next, we're going to be joined by Brian McGrory, the editor of the Boston Globe. We're going to talk a little Supreme Court with him. We're going to talk a little Aaron Hernandez with him, who's going to be arraigned at 2:00 this afternoon. We do not know what he's going to be arraigned on, but he has been arrested, as you probably heard. Stay tuned for Brian McGrory up next, 89.7. WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Back in the day, a theater was more than just movies and popcorn.
The historic theater in these downtowns is one of the few remaining true, authentic sources of the community.
I'm Sarah Gardner. How one southern city is revamping its landmark theater and reviving memories. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Tonight at 6 here on WGBH Radio.
WGBH programs exist because of you and Newbridge on the Charles in Dedham. This active senior community in a natural setting offers something for everyone. You can find out what many seniors have already discovered at experiencenewbridge.org. And the Boston Speaker Series, presented by Lesley University, offering 7 evenings at Symphony Hall with a lineup of speakers that includes a prime minister, a Pulitzer Prize winner, a humorist, and even a former spy. BostonSpeakerSeries.org.
One person can make a big difference. But when a whole community comes together, amazing things can happen. And right now, when you support Boston Public Radio, amazing things will happen. That's because other listeners have gotten together and agreed to match your gift in any amount, dollar for dollar. But the match won't last long. Call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at wgbhnews.org.
So here's what you do. You call 888-897-9424, or you give online at wgbhnews.org. I am Jim Browdy, along with Marge Regan. We're both asking you to pitch in and please help this program and others like it to keep it free and available. As you know, there's a dollar-for-dollar match going on right now. We want to thank a bunch of people who took advantage of the dollar-for-dollar match. Some of them are Helen in Little Compton, Rhode Island, Kelsey in Dorchester, Peter in Providence, Rhode Island, and David in West Wareham, Mass. Please be like these people and have your gifts doubled again by calling 888-897-9424 or simply go online at wgbhnews.org. Joining us with more on all these special deals is Kim Saltmarsh. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Jim. Look, so let's cut to the chase. We have less than an hour to take advantage of this dollar-for-dollar match. It's a really, really rare opportunity. We need to hear from 39 people by 2 p.m. We can definitely get there, but that means you and 38 other people. And so we need you to step up, make that call, 888-897-9424 or online at wgbhnews.org. So again, whenever you give today goes twice as far. So let's break that down. Let's say you give $50 right now. That's actually $100. Say you're feeling very generous and you give a $500 gift. We thank you so much. Today, right now, in this hour, it counts as $1,000. That $1,000 goes back into the programs that you love. If you love listening to Jim and Marjorie, if you love Morning Edition, let's just say you love Wait, Wait on the Weekend. All of that goes right back into the programs here on 89.7. So why would you wait? Have your gift doubled when you call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at wgbhnews.org.
You know, since the start of this fundraising drive, lots of people who gave online at wgbhnews.org left a comment about why they support Boston Public Radio, and it's kind of fun to read them. In fact, we might read yours. Here's a few. Your station is about the only one that presents stimulating and intelligent topics and speakers. How about that, Jim?
I was the one who said that, Marjorie.
Okay. Your station gives me my morning news. I am giving to try and keep WGBH as independent as possible. Keep up being impartial. That's a great comment, too. Here's one more. I love hearing multiple sides of the same story and being able to form informed opinions on issues that really, really matter. Share your reason for giving when you give online at wgbhnews.org, and we can read why you like WGBH and why you gave.
Now, as part of an ongoing series about the impact of war, NPR's Quil Lawrence flew to one of the most remote towns in the United States. It's called Wales, Alaska. He reported on the difficulties faced by the VA in trying to take care of every veteran in the country, especially ones who live hundreds of miles from the nearest city. This is where public radio takes you that nobody else does. It's that simple. And if you value unique storytelling as much as we do about people and places you might not think about, then please, please consider making a gift in any amount that you can afford.
Yeah, again, there is a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now, so that means whatever you give is going to be doubled. We need to hear from 35 people, just 35 people, by 2 p.m. We can get there, but we need your help. Again, this is the most important fundraiser of the year yet for WGBH. That's because the fiscal year for WGBH now ends on June 30th. That's just days away. As you remember, it used to be in August. So that means this time we have even less time to cover the costs for the programs that you love. So to sweeten the deal, we wanted to sweeten it up for you. We've got that dollar-for-dollar match right now. Your gift is going to be doubled. This is a really rare opportunity, so please take advantage of it. You're also going to be entered to win a trip for two to Europe. That's really exciting. So whatever you give, you get entered into that contest. You can choose from a bunch of thank you gifts, but best of all, you're making sure that you're keeping quality programs on the air like this one. Today is the day to make that call right now, 888-897-9424, or give online at wgbhnews.org.
Here's another great comment from someone who to give online. It's Amanda from Belrica, Mass. She said, yesterday was election day, and you reminded me to vote. Thank you so much. And Amanda, thank you very much for listening.
That's
okay.
Great.
The best part about giving online, apart from the fact that it's easy and convenient, is that, like I said, you can share your reasons for listening and maybe say some nice things, which Jim and I will be thrilled to hear you say, and everybody else around here will be thrilled to hear you say them as well. So please, when you give, share your reason. When you give online at wgbhnews.org or call, here's the number, two more times, 888- 897-9424. 888-897-9424. That's 888-897-9424. And thank you very much.
I am Lori.
Hey,
I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I've never lived in the Boston area. The first thing I did was unpack my radio and then turn it in to WGBH. I think I started listening the day that Jim and Marjorie began on air, and so I've learned a lot from listening to their program. I believe it's important for listeners of public broadcasting to become a sustainer because it's easy, right? You know, also by doing a monthly contribution, it's just a small chunk out of your monthly expenses. And I think it's just important to support the programming that you utilize. So that's why I do it.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. He is the editor of the Boston Globe. He joins us on Open Mic every Wednesday at about 1. Welcome, Brian McGrory, on a relatively packed news day. Hey, Brian.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Marjorie. How are you guys?
Hey, Brian. Great. It is a relatively packed, I would say very packed news day. Start with one of the biggest news stories of the day. Obviously, Brian, the gay marriage decisions from the United States Supreme Court on the Domestic Marriage Act and gay marriage in California. What do you make of this?
Well, it's quite a day. First of all, on the news day, is it me or has it felt like every day has been a big news day since mid-April or so, but today is particularly big. So yes, on the gay marriage story, they are really fascinating decisions handed down by the court, and they resonate, for my money, here in Massachusetts more than they probably do virtually anywhere, because this entire movement basically started right here in 2003 with the Goodrich ruling, and we have ever since then seen dominoes fall across the country. We have seen action in state capitals across the country. We have had Margaret Marshall's words resonating here in Massachusetts. And what was truly an outlier decision when the SJC here, Supreme Judicial Court, made its ruling back in November 2003 has now become far more the norm. And if you remember, think back to where we were in 2003. John Kerry was a presidential candidate, and he was not coming out in favor of gay marriage. Bill Clinton had signed DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which was, not giving rights to people who wanted to marry, who were gay. And Tom Riley, the Attorney General back then, was against what the court was trying to do, or what the court did do in terms of gay marriage. This was truly an outlying decision back then, and now it's part of the national norm. It's really incredible where we've come in 10 years.
Not only in terms of leaders, but I couldn't agree with you more, but look at the poll numbers. I mean, virtually every poll that comes out now has a majority of the American people, not just in places like Massachusetts, supporting gay marriage. You know, the other Massachusetts connection that bears mentioning is that Martha Coakley was the first person to successfully challenge the Defense of Marriage Act, what was it, 2009, 2010, when a district court here struck it down, saying it was unconstitutional. While that wasn't the case that ended up being appealed to the Supreme Court, it's a pretty big day for her, too.
It's a big day for her. It's a big day for a lot of people here. And, Jim, your point about the poll numbers is a really, really good one because, and again, I don't mean to keep going back to where we were in 03, but do you remember when people said that the passage of beginning of gay marriage here in 2004 would basically threaten their own marriages, heterosexual marriages, and then it would tear neighborhoods asunder? It would create this awful environment up here. And the reality is that exactly none of that happened. None of it.
Well, also, keep in mind, the Red Sox hadn't won a World Series in 80-some years, and then all of a sudden.
You know what else, though, Brian? I'm sure you experienced this yourself with your colleagues or with your close friends or family. I heard people say over and over again, oh, okay, I'm okay with gay rights. I want people to have rights, not get fired from their jobs or lose their apartments. But marriage, I just can't even go there. And these are pretty progressive people. And yet, you're right, they've just done a 180 in a very short time on a civil rights issue. It's astounding. I mean, it's been said a million times, but the speed with which gay rights has gone from zero to, 80% or maybe 70%, depending on your perspective on this, is just astounding.
Yes, exactly. Marjorie, it also shows, you know, for my money, above and beyond anything else, the value of a judiciary. And when you have courts that invoke themselves in terms of civil rights, as they did with women's issues, black-white issues, this is what the courts are there to fundamentally do, to assure civil rights. And it was done in a really impactful way here.
You know, since you're both doing history lessons, I want to add a little hit my part of history to you. You know, interestingly, I don't know what it was. Oh, we had Jeffrey Toobin on a couple of weeks ago.
You want
ago.
To go back to Provincetown, Jim, when you were running the leather merchant and the shop down there? Is that what you want to tell us about?
Speaking of Margaret Marshall, when her husband died a month or so ago, the Pulitzer Prize winner from the New York Times.
Anthony Lewis.
Right, of course. We had Jeffrey Toobin on, who'd been a student of his, obviously legal analyst for CNN. And we were talking about how, and this is apropos of your point, Brian, is when Loving versus Virginia was decided by the Supreme Court, the interracial marriage decision, somewhere in the neighborhood of 70%, this is only, what was it, in the 70s, was it? I think it was in the 70s. 70%+ of Americans opposed interracial marriage. It was
67.
So it's incredible. And the other historical thing, and then I'll shut up about this, is while you were totally right about the role of the courts, and Loving is another example, is remember what was said immediately after Margie Marshall's decision as Chief Justice? Well, that's an unelected bunch of people. How about the legislatures? How about ballot questions? Well, as of now, of the 12 states that allow gay marriage plus D.C., we do have places where people have decided on the ballot to approve it and where legislators have approved it with, you know, small d democratically. So it is a totally different day. In any case,
Moving on to something not quite as uplifting.
Edifying, yes.
As a discussion about the Supreme Court and gay rights. Aaron Hernandez, the New England Patriots tight end, of course, was taken out of his home in North Attleboro this morning in handcuffs. We don't yet know what he's going to be charged with. That's going to happen later this afternoon. But we do know he's been released from the Patriots. What say you, Brian McGroy, editor of the Boston Globe?
Well, can I just ask you guys something?
Yes.
So you hear five or six cars pull up in front of your house and park in your driveway, and some of them are police cars. The others are obviously unmarked cars, and there's a knock on your door, and it's early in the morning. Why do you answer the door shirtless? Why do you do that?
That is a great question.
I mean, come on. Are you showing off? You know, are you? I don't get that at all.
Well, I'm trying to put myself in his place. Had I had the physique that he did, I might answer the door shirtless.
He's you showing
do, Jim,
off.
You
too.
Do. Don't sell yourself short. You would look terrific. You know what? If Jim came to the door shirtless, would the cops all turn around and
leave? Okay, fine. Brian, that was not
they
the,
just let him go?
Thank you. Fine.
They would. They'd be in awe.
Hey, Brian, on the Hernandez note, something we've been talking about nonstop, the conversation was joined by, you know, Joan Vinocchi, columnist for your paper, right?
She's a terrific columnist.
She's a fabulous columnist. Here's what Joan Vinocchi had to say on our show on Monday relating to the coverage of the Hernandez case by the media. Listen to Joan.
Now we know what it takes to get people to focus on the death of a black man from Dorchester.
And he was this came in the wake of the triple murder on Intervale the other day. And so the question is, not for media in general, you can speak, so we don't totally put you on the spot. Guilty, hung jury, or not guilty? Looking at the comparative coverage of things like, what, 70 shootings in 67 days since the marathon in Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan is compared to this media swarm out there in North Attleboro.
Well, Jim, I mean, first of all, of course there's a media swarm out there in Attleboro. The guy is not only a professional football player, he's an all-star football player, and his story is a story, you know, of the human condition. Somebody who grew up with, you know, in a mediocre environment, had overcome all sorts of obstacles in life, and then probably succumbed to, you know, what you know afflicted him early on in life. So it's a very human story. He's a very well-known suspect, and so of course there's going to be a media swarm there. It's just the nature of what we live in now. But the argument that we don't cover regular murders in Dorchester or Mattapan or Roxbury isn't just tired, it's exhausted. If you open the Globe on any given day after a murder has occurred, I can guarantee you that you are going to read a full story about what happened and who died, and we're going to have reporters in that neighborhood interviewing witnesses, knocking on doors, climbing stairs, as Jimmy Breslin used to say, to find out what happened. We don't let murders go unreported in this city, at least in this newspaper. So it's easy to sit there and say, oh, my God, look at all the attention this murder got because of Aaron Hernandez. Of course it did. But that doesn't mean we're not going to cover the other ones as well.
But you know what? You know what, Brian, though, and I wrote about this, too, and we cover murders all the time in the Herald, and it's interesting, and you know this. You know, some people complain you do it too much, and you don't accentuate the positive in the tough parts of Boston. You're always focusing on murders, blah, 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 blah. But I think there's a growing anger in those neighborhoods. I mean, I've heard it from people I've talked to. It's Hernandez on top of the One Fund and the Marathon. It's like the whole world stops for the Marathon. On. The media is down there, and you know the helicopters and everything else on and Hernandez, and we don't get. It's like we're not worth what those people are. I mean, and they've got a legitimate point.
I mean, I've heard the argument, but the Marathon attack was a terrorist attack on one of the most cherished institutions of this city. And again, I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but of course we're going to devote extended and exhaustive resources to that story. It was a major international story. I mean, I don't know how many times I can say it, but we do cover shootings and murders as well as we think we can in these neighborhoods. And Marjorie, you raised a great point. It's a balancing act because you don't want to overcome.
Right.
You don't want to overdo these events because then you
get criticized for that.
You make these entire neighborhoods just look like battlefields,
yep.
And they're not. You know, these are real places where real people live with real dreams, real goals, real jobs, real ambitions. And to make it sound like it's just one big shooting gallery is completely wrong. So we do get out there. We do talk to people when murders occur, but. You know, you're threading the needle here a little bit.
So Marjorie said it better than I, so I will move on. Brian McGrory, what's your take? I mean, it seems like the Markey Gomez election was about a month ago based on what's happened in between. What's the one takeaway from – well, actually, I was going to ask you what your takeaway from last night is. Let me tell you what my takeaway is from last night, that we should never have another special election in Massachusetts, that the law should be changed immediately. When you have turnouts, so I don't know what the final thing was, somewhere between 25% and 30% to fill an office that had been filled for decades by someone before, something is really broken that needs fixing. That's my takeaway. How about you?
And it's an interesting point, and I'd have to think that through a little bit more about whether it would be better to simply have a gubernatorial appointment fill out the remainder of the term. I mean, it's a reasonable argument, and you know we've gone back and forth on that here in Massachusetts,
of course,
whether that was a way to do it. But did we really benefit by having this particular election at this time, or would it have been better for the governor to have appointed, you know, for example, Mo Cowan to serve not the 5 or 6 months that he did, but the 2 years that he would have if he had just filled out the remainder of John Kerry's term. It's something we should be thinking about. It's because this election, in every possible way, was a subdued affair at very best.
Do you think part, and this is not an area of blaming the media, I think there was an effort on everybody's part, from television to radio to the Globe and the Herald, to give this as much coverage as I think it deserved. So it's not a pogo-esque kind of moment. But when I hear this crap that, you know, the Bruins, the Bulger trial, it's 95 degrees, as a justification for more than 70% of the electorate not bothering to go to the polls, it makes me want to have my head pop off my shoulders.
Well, part of it was the candidates themselves.
But they're not superstar candidates. I know you wrote this all the other day, and actually Scott Lehigh wrote a variation on the theme today in the Globe. You rarely get superstar candidates.
Actually, we get a lot of them around here.
And so, I mean, where do you think the blame lies here, Brian? Assume you believe that more participatory democracy is better for democracy.
Jim, that's one more difference between me and you.
What's that?
You are always looking to blame somebody.
Yes, I am. I am.
You're looking to blame me for this. You're
yes.
Looking to blame Marjorie for that.
For something
else. I feel awful for your poor producers in there because I can't even imagine the blame they must fall under with you.
That's right.
But, okay, I'm not leaving this.
Jim is never wrong.
The reality is,
yeah.
And I'm going to answer your question here.
Go ahead.
Reality is there may not be anyone to blame here. There may simply be political exhaustion. We have been through a lot in this state in recent years. We have been through the enormous special election with which Scott Brown won, in which he beat Martha Coakley. We were through a huge presidential election. We had the Warren Brown race, which was simply the biggest Senate election in the country at the time. We have been bombarded with television ads for upwards of 3 years here. The last thing the electorate of Massachusetts really wanted to see right now was a special election, and you know, we got one, and we got it with two candidates who ended up not all that exciting out on the stump, and there's nobody to blame. It's just what happened.
Oh, yes, there is. Now, Brian, if it turns out there's nobody to blame, then what are you going to say when we talk to you, let's say, in 17 months, during which period of time we will have a special election to fill the seat of Ed Markey?
That's right.
We'll have two mayoral elections, a preliminary and a final in Boston, which obviously will be huge, and we'll have a gubernatorial election and a reelection campaign for Ed Markey against some Republicans. So if we allegedly suffer from election fatigue on whatever it is, June 25th yesterday, what's it going to be like 17 months from now?
Well, you know, I think people will get into this mayoral election. There are a lot of candidates out there. There are some good issues to address here. I think people will appreciate that. I have a feeling the gubernatorial election will attract some very serious and high-profile candidates. And who knows? You know, the Markey reelection, he might attract a revamped Gabriel Gomez, or perhaps, imagine if you got Bill Weld running against him. I mean, that would be a high-profile race, to be sure.
Or so, Scott Brown, or who knows?
You're writing all this off already. I am ever optimistic about the future.
I'm ready to blame people for all those elections that haven't even happened yet, Brian.
Really,
that's
are.
Where I
you're,
am.
You're an angry man. You're an angry
very
man.
Very angry man.
We're talking with Brian McGrory, editor of the Boston Globe. You know what I wonder, Brian? Because, the newspapers were always worried about, our circulation and how well the web is doing and all that. How much would it have mattered? I know it would have mattered to us at the Herald had the Bruins won the Stanley Cup in terms of circulation, web traffic. How important are those kind of championships to newspapers?
I hadn't noticed. Was that important for you?
I know. I mean, that's part of the reason I was rooting so big to sell more papers.
Why are you trying to bring me down here?
I'm sorry, Brian.
It was a big deal for a lot of people.
Yeah.
In your organization and in mine, it was an especially big deal. People were fascinated, not only simply by the fact we're in the Stanley Cup Championship Series here, but this particular team in this particular series were really, really interesting.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was exciting to people. And you could put up the special section and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, my God. You can be filled with advertisements.
Yeah.
And, everybody and their mother taking out a congratulatory ad. And,
that's right. Would have been great. Awesome.
Yeah, wouldn't it have been great?
Do you have any sense yet of what the Whitey coverage is doing for the Globe?
Oh, yeah. People are really into it.
Yeah, they're into it at the Herald, too.
People are really into it. People are really into people are really into a lot of things going on right now. As we said at the outset, it's just been a really busy news period.
You know, to continue a theme briefly, Brian, I blame Zdeno Chara for the loss by the Bruins. Who do you blame? Now, Brian, we're talking to Brian McGrory, the editor of the Boston Globe. Before you go, you asked me last week to remind you that tomorrow is the deadline for bids for buyers at the Boston Globe. It's tomorrow. Is there anything you want to share with us? That's a big day. Anything you want to share with us?
There's so much I want to share with you, Jim, none of which we should probably do here on the air. But so it has been reported in my own paper that tomorrow is the deadline for bids. So you are right on that, Jim. And other than that, I'm going to shut my fat face.
Okay, fine. Brian McGrory, it's been a pleasure as always.
It's not a fat face, as I recall.
No, I think it's a rhetorical flourish she was doing.
Face, as I recall.
Brian, it's great to talk to you. We'll talk to you next week.
Jim, great talking to you. Marjorie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian McGrory. Brian McGrory is editor of the Boston Globe. He joins us every Wednesday at 1 o'clock to talk the issues of the day. Tomorrow, Christopher Lydon is with us at 1. Okay, so what does summer mean to you in Hollywood? Summer means coming of age, repairing family relations, undergoing major physical changes, and of course, sharks. That conversation is next with film critic Garen Daly. This is Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
A new television show is catching buzz for the sexy and scandalous storylines.
Keep your friends close, but your maids closer.
But it's also sparking debate. Does devious maids perpetuate stereotypes or just give Latina actresses some shine? The Beauty Shop ladies weigh in next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is made possible thanks to you. And Grogan & Company, Fine Art Auctioneers, assisting New England families with the sale of their fine art, antiques, silver, and jewelry since 1988. Located in historic Dedham, Massachusetts, and at GroganCO.com. And the Museum of Science, where you can uncover a portal to ancient times at the new Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit. See what life was really like over 2,000 years ago. More information at mos.org.
Think about the best thing you heard on public radio this year. Maybe you heard a report.
She's been the general manager of the MBTA. Beverly,
who was interviewing someone.
It's a pleasure, absolutely.
There was probably also a producer in the next room calling the shots.
We've got our next guest on the line.
And an engineer running the board.
Can I get a mic check, please?
Then there's a whole staff of people doing research, taking care of the details, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and the folks up at Great Blue Hill making sure the antenna works. And last, but certainly not least, there's a community of listeners all across New England.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
And beyond.
Hello.
In other words, no one does public radio alone. And in that spirit, right now, other WGBH supporters are agreeing to match your gift in any amount, dollar for dollar, but only for a limited time. So please call 888-897-9424. The match also works when you give online at WGBHnews.org.
888-897-9424. That is the number to call to contribute, or you can give securely online at WGBHnews.org. This is the most important fundraiser of the year on WGBH. It's over in just a couple of days, and that means WGBH really, really needs you to pitch in right now. Your support helps Jim and me go in-depth on stories that really, really matter to you. So today's the day to get involved. With more, here is producer Kim Saltmarsh. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Marjorie. Thank you so much. Look, we've got about 25 minutes. We still need to hear from 20 people, so that's less than a person per minute. So we're getting very close, but the countdown is on, so we really need to hear from you in order to make this a success. So right now is the best time to make it a success, and it's the most practical time to give because there's a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. So what does that mean, you're asking? Well, that means whatever you gift is your gift is going to be doubled. So let's say you make a $150 contribution right now. Well, that actually means it's showing up as $300 worth of support for the news and programs that you rely on. So your gift of, let's say, $700, that's $1,400. It's going to be doubled. That's thanks to WGBH supporters who know the power of public broadcasting like you do, and they're agreeing to match your gift dollar for dollar. So please take advantage of this. The match is not going to last long. It's up at 2 p.m., so you've got just under 25 minutes now to take advantage of this. Please be the one to make that next call, 888-897-9424, or online at WGBHnews.org.
How many more people do we need to pledge by 2 o'clock, Kim?
20.
If we don't get 20, I'm going to hold my breath. That's what I'm going to do.
I don't want to see that.
Okay, forget that. You know, recently, Morning Edition reported on the deforestation battle going on in Indonesia. Reporter Anthony Kuhn traveled to Jakarta, told the story of how one paper company was convinced to change its policies. This is where public radio takes you. So if you value global awareness, I know Marjorie and I do, if you want your community to stay connected to these kinds of stories, both locally and overseas, then please do your part to keep public broadcasting on the air.
Get going and support WGBH, Boston Public Radio, with a gift of $240 right now. And listen to this. WGBH will say thanks with the Micro Greens Veggie Grow Box. How neat is that? That means you can harvest all year round with this windowsill grow box. They are so neat. Organic veggies include red acre cabbage, mini carrots, torn thumb peas. You ever seen those, Jim?
I have.
And the best part is they are ready in 1 to 2 weeks. Plus, you'll help WGBH grow with your grow box while you're growing things yourself at home. Here's the number and the website two more times, 888-897-9424, 888-897-9424, or online at WGBHnews.org. That's WGBHnews.org.
Looking to hear from 20 people by 2 p.m. We are inching closer to that 2 p.m. mark to take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match. A bunch of incentives for you to give right now. Of course, that dollar-for-dollar match. If you're going to give, why would you not take advantage of this? This is such a practical and easy choice. You want your gift to go twice as far. Make it doubled. If you're going to give, now's the time. So we've got that dollar-for-dollar match. Also, anybody who gives right now is going to be entered to win that Rick Steves trip. It's a trip for two to one of four European destinations, Rome, London, Paris, or Istanbul, courtesy, again, of PBS travel guru Rick Steves. He's actually going to call you. We know Jim likes that. So he's going to give you a call. It's really an amazing trip and a great incentive, a bunch of thank you gifts. But most importantly, and this is the actual reason that you're giving, it's whatever gift you give goes right back into the programming you love. If you love Jim and Marjorie, if you love Morning Edition, if you just love 89.7, stand up for it right now and take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match. 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org.
And don't forget, this is the most important fundraiser of the entire year. This dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now, which is great. WGBH's fiscal year now ends just, what is it, 4 days from now. It's June 30th. That means there's just a few days left to raise the money needed to keep this station going. Again, the number, 888-897-9424, or you can give online at WGBHnews.org. That's part of the contract of public radio. You get all this content for free every day, and every now and then we ask you to pitch in. It only takes a few minutes. It's really worth it, and it means a huge amount to me and Marjorie. Plus, you'll feel great. So call 888-897-9424, or you can give online at WGBHnews.org, and thank you.
Microgreens are the talk of the culinary world. You can grow them on your windowsill in about 2 weeks. They're big on flavor, small in size, and taste great in almost anything. Whoever thought something so small could make such a big difference? When you help public broadcasting continue to grow with a gift of $240, Boston Public Radio will say thanks with the Microgreens Veggie Grow Box. It even comes with two full crops of seeds to help you get growing. Call 888-897-9424 or start or renew your membership when you give online at WGBHnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. In a break from the weightier issues of the day, we're going to talk about summer movies. And to get you in the mood, here's a clip from one of my all-time favorites, Stand By Me.
In all our lives, there's a fall from innocence, a time after which we are never the same. It happened in the summer of 1959, a long time ago.
Oh, man, wait till you hear this. Wait till you hear this.
What is it, man?
You guys want to go see a dead body? When the night...
One of the greatest songs and one of the greatest movies. Call us with your favorite summer movie at 877-301-8970. You have to be able to defend your choice. In the interim, joining us in Studio 3 is our friend and film critic, Garen Daly. He's the director and producer of the forthcoming documentary, which I can't wait to see, The Orson Welles Complex. Garen, welcome back.
How you guys doing?
Hi, Garen. So are there certain themes or ideas that make summer movies you don't want to have them come out in January? They're July, August movies.
Well, yeah, I think we make the difference between what a summer movie is in Hollywood's term and what we consider a summer movie.
Okay.
Hollywood summer movies are Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, all the mans that are out
yeah.
there.
All the mans.
But, you know, summer movies deal with a very specific time and a specific incident in people's life. It could be simply as four guys going down a railroad track looking for a body, and in that process find out about themselves and where their life is going to go. So it becomes this kind of transition reflection time. That's one aspect of it, too. And when you start breaking them all down, there are lots of these kinds of themes within summer vacation.
Okay,
movies.
So that's why Stand By Me is a great movie.
Well, it's also, as Jim said, the music is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got great casting. You've got River Phoenix in one of his best roles, Will Wheaton, Kiefer Sutherland as his nastiest, and it's Rob Reiner at his best. So you've got a great film with a great story, Stephen King, and it's all put together very nicely.
I totally forgot it was Stephen King.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That and what's the other Stephen King movie, which has nothing to do with summer, where you say, I can't believe that is Stephen King?
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah. I mean, it really is
two of the great films out
two
there.
Two of the great films. Yeah. 877-301-8970. We're talking to Garen Daly.
He wrote that book?
Yes. About exactly. Marjorie's mouth is wide open.
Exactly.
We're talking about the great summer movies. We want to hear your nominees. Now, I worked in the Catskills when I was a little boy.
Really?
I did. I worked at Grossinger's.
Uh-huh.
And we were sort of the poor sister to the Concord Hotel. And the Concord was allegedly the one that Dirty Dancing was based upon. Dirty Dancing fits into this category,
oh,
yes?
Absolutely.
And Tell people about it for those who don't know the film.
It's a story about Baby, who is a young child, a young daughter of this family going to vacation in the Catskills, and how she meets a dancer who opens up her life. Now, what is great about Dirty Dancing, not only is the final scene incredible, but what's really good about it is the double message you get in there. The double message of, one, she's a young woman who is experiencing and exploring life through the sensuality of dance. At the same token, she is offered a challenge by what is happening to some of these people, and she abides by her father's teachings, much to his chagrin, until he realizes that this is his daughter. So it's very positive in both of those ways.
Do we have sound from Dirty Dancing? We do. Here's a little bit from Jennifer Grey, Patrick Swayze's Dirty Dancing.
I'm out, baby.
They fired you anyway because of me.
And if I leave quietly, I'll get my son a bonus.
So I did it for nothing. I hurt my family. You lost your job anyway. I did it for nothing.
No, no, not for nothing, baby. Nobody has ever done anything like that for me before.
You're right, Johnny. You can't win no matter what you do.
You listen to me. I don't want to hear that from you. You can.
I used to think so.
Is that the worst accent in the history of movies, yeah, or what? Patrick Swayze, it's up there, right?
No, it's up there. I mean, I think Diane Lane, when she did the Glasser Express. Yeah, he was looking, yeah, he was good in that, yeah.
Oh, my God.
What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite song? I know you don't like, you're not a favorites, number ones kind of guy, but if you could only pick one, I know you hate this, Garen Daly. What's the one you'd say, this is the one I want to see? What is it?
Well, it's a lesser one. It's called,
what is it?
One Crazy Summer.
I don't even know it. What is it?
It's directed by Savage Steve Holland, and it stars John Cusack and Demi Moore and Bobcat Goldthwaite.
I love
and it's a story about a guy who's called Hoops who can't shoot a basketball, trying to help a girl who's losing her house. And it's got all the tropes that you find in a typical film like that.
Now, is the biggest grossing summer movie ever Jaws, I'm guessing? Is it?
Yeah. And then, you know, there are three
lessons.
Ruined
my life.
But there are three very important lessons with Jaws, you know. One, don't go swimming at night. Two, make sure you watch the kids. And if you go fishing, bring a bigger boat.
Yeah, don't go swimming at night. I remember watching that movie and thinking this can't be true. And then I went researched on sharks and I found out that this huge percentage of shark attacks happen in 3 feet of water within 10 feet of shore.
Right.
And I thought, and I just learned how to scuba dive at the time, and it ruined my whole scuba diving career.
But, you know, there's something interesting about Jaws, though, that I want to talk about in terms of a summer movie. It's one of the few films that shows summer movies or summer vacations as being a business. And if you take a look at the Murray Hamilton character,
yeah,
who is really kind of obnoxious, it's all about the business. And everything that he's talking about is about business. And that's you don't see that too often.
You
now, here's
what's going to happen in Chatham this summer. When is Chatham going to have to deal with this shark problem? Sooner or later.
That is Jaws, the number 18, I believe it is. We're not going to talk about the sequels. Here's a little piece. I hope it's got the great music in it. Here's a little piece of Jaws. Here it is.
Oh, said Chubby.
Oh,
wrong clip. We'll get to it in a minute. We can all do the music in our heads. So tell me one more time, and then we're going to take some calls. What makes, not in the minds of the industry, in the minds of real people, in one sentence, what makes a summer movie a summer movie?
Metamorphosis.
Okay, fair enough. Let's take a couple of calls about what your favorite summer movie is and why. Ida, you're in Exeter, New Hampshire. You're on with Garen Daly, Jim Browdy, and Marjorie Egan. Hi, Ida.
Graffiti. It was a great coming-of-age movie.
Yeah. Garen's shaking his head up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
Why'd you like it, Ida?
It just kept your interest. It's still, even if I watch it today, I still see things that I didn't see then. I think it showcased all the different kids that what they're dealing with in the summertime. It showcases the loneliness and the wanting to fit in and the lust for an older woman. And the girl who doesn't want to lose her boyfriend, she's desperate to keep him, and the boys who want to escape the small towns. It just has everything.
Ida, I love the way you enunciated lust for an older woman. That was, Ida, it was beautiful. Thanks for the call. Okay. Is American Graffiti the film that, what's the name of the great comedic actress that was all the Christopher Guest movies, who's local? We had her on with us on our former show. What's the name? She's from Marlboro, one of the M towns. What's her name?
Blonde. She
Jennifer Coolidge. Wasn't Jennifer Coolidge. Coolidge? Is she in American Graffiti, or am I wrong?
I don't remember her being
She's in American Pie. I'm off.
Yeah,
so does American Graffiti belong in that
absolutely.
Pantheon?
Absolutely. It's one one of the great summer film, vacation. It is a film about transition. It is the transition of ending in high school and going towards college. Yeah. So it's that rite of passage. And as you go through the story, you go through everyone's different transition and how are they going to come out.
And the drive-thru. They're always at the drive-thru. I love that.
And driving down the road and Harrison Ford and,
yes.
and Paul LaMatt. I mean, it's got a great cast of young people.
Now, I am one who, the dumber the movie is, particularly in summer, the happier I am, which means I love the vacation movies. The Chevy Chase, I have to say.
They are the gold standard.
I mean, it is so pathetic, the humor. I don't know which is the vacation movie when they drive like 400 hours to get to the Grand Canyon, and then he goes, he looks like, the, you know, like for that, 10 seconds.
That's National Lampoon's Vacation.
Is that the original vacation?
And Shades of the Last Presidential Election, that's when they also put the dead grandmother on top of the car.
that is exactly, it wasn't the grandmother, it was the dog in the last presidential election. So the Griswold family's cross-country drive
to... you say the Griswold family,
right,
I just start to laugh.
Wally World theme park proves to be much more arduous than they ever anticipated. Listen up.
This is no longer a vacation. It's a quest. It's a quest for fun. I'm going to have fun, and you're going to have fun. We're all going to have so much fun, we'll need plastic surgery to remove our goddamn smiles. You'll be whistling zippity-doo-dah out of your... I gotta be crazy. Holy shit.
Dad, you want to ask for something?
Don't touch!
The three of us are laughing like fools in the studio, I should say.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Herb from Boston, what's your favorite summer movie?
I would have to say Do the Right Thing by
Spike Lee.
Oh, I love that.
I love Do the Right Thing.
Love that.
Why does that do it for you, Herb?
I would have to say it was mainly due to the fact that, it's a hot summer day, and it's basically one of the many catalysts that brings together a lot of the social issues that were going on in the neighborhood at the time that comes to a head into the
Herb, we're losing you. Thanks for the call. It's a bad connection. Is Do the Right Thing the great poster for the movie? Which Spike Lee movie has a black hand holding the white hand of a woman? You know it's a woman because she's got nail polish on. Is it Do the Right Thing?
I believe so, yeah.
Wait, one of the most powerful... Oh, you don't remember that?
Wasn't that The Jungle?
No. I don't think so. Whatever it was. So Do the Right Thing. Does that fall on your list?
That definitely falls on my list. Again, it's about those transitional periods where the environment, it makes an impact and social issues... It's, again, Spike Lee at his best.
Has Spike Lee done anything of late? What's he doing?
He did a documentary about the Central Park situation.
The rape.
And I think he's working on something else again. He hasn't been, I think his earlier films, he was much stronger, but that's just my opinion.
Number's 877-301-8970. And there's a movie in which, I may be wrong, you'll correct me, I know, I believe, is it the only movie where I think one of the greatest actresses of our time performed with her father? Is On Golden Pond the only time the Fondas were together?
That's the only time that they were together. And again, it's Katharine Hepburn, Henry Fonda, and Jane Fonda. And there is a great scene in that film. And this is when we're talking about family vacations and vacations in general. One of the things that these films do is you're bringing families together in an intense period of time. And as such, you get Jane Fonda actually talking to her father as Jane Fonda and her father with Katharine Hepburn on the sidelines cheering him on.
Before I play the clip, it was a Jungle Fever.
It was a great poster.
It was great.
She
that
just
was
wanted
also,
to correct us, I know.
That was also a great movie. Well, I remember that movie very well. That's why I said
why is that?
It was just a terrific movie.
Okay, fine. There's more to that story. Here is On Golden Pond with the Fondas and Katharine Hepburn.
I think that maybe you and I should have the kind of relationship that we're supposed to have.
What kind of relationship is that?
Well, like a father and a daughter.
Yeah, just in the nick of time, huh? Worried about the will, are you? Well, I'm leaving everything to you except what I'm taking with me.
Just stop it. I don't want anything. It seems that you and me have been mad at each other for so long.
I didn't know we were mad, though. We just didn't like each other.
I want to be your friend.
Oh. This means you come around more often. Mean a lot to your mother.
Yeah, I hesitate to say this, Garen, because Marjorie's going to mock me the second I say it. I remember weeping as I'm sitting in the... Don't say anything, Marjorie. As I'm sitting in the movie theater, watch that scene is one of the most powerful, wonderful scenes between real father and fictional father and daughter that I've ever seen.
Right. There are a few scenes like that in all of film history, and I can pick out one other one.
Like what is that?
That would be the scene where Spencer Tracy in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner is talking to Katharine Hepburn,
yeah.
And he's going to be dead in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He knows he's dying, and he's talking about the woman that he's loved. So you get these really emotional moments on screen and captured. And it's, you're right. How can you not deny the impact, the import of what they're saying?
Well, also because when you read these biographies about Jane Fonda, you know that the relationship between her and her father was very strained.
Yeah, it was very strained. And it was that movie and that scene that changed it.
Let's take another call or two if we can. Tyler, you're in Marion. You're on with Jim, Marjorie, and Garen. Thank you kindly for the call. Hi, Tyler.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My favorite summer movie is Dazed and Confused.
Well,
and the reason that it is my favorite movie is because when I first saw it, I was in junior high going to high school, and when they get out of school and they just catch those kids and beat them down with the poles, I thought that is actually what happened. And I was very terrified to go to high school.
Okay, Tyler, thanks for the nomination. What do you think of Dazed and Confused, Garen?
I love Dazed and Confused. And what I like to do with Dazed and Confused is I like to put it against American Graffiti. Because American Graffiti is this kind of idealized version of what the transition from high school to adult life is. And in Dazed and Confused, you find people who are really dazed and confused and have no idea how to navigate. I mean, Matthew McConaughey is still looking to score with 16-year-old chicks.
Let's squeeze in one more quick one. Karen, you're in Lexington, and we're talking about great summer movies. What's yours, Karen? Hi, Karen. Or not. Karen, I don't know. She may have disappeared. Let's try Alex in Arlington very quickly. Alex, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Hi, Alex.
Hi. My movie would be Heavyweight with Ben Stiller, where he takes over a fat camp and turns it into a torture camp to try and make it more corporate. And then finally the kids have enough and they take it over.
I don't know. By the way, I love Ben Stiller. I don't know this movie. You're laughing.
Well, it falls into a group of summer vacation movies. Heavyweights being one, Meatballs, Wet Hot American Summer, where they do these riffs on what the camp experience was and turns it into humor.
Okay, so before we go, Garen Daly, give us the three movies that if people say I have virtually no time, I'm going to rent three movies, summer movies that Garen Daly told me to watch, and I'm going to watch them this weekend. What are they?
Well, first of all, I'm going to give you one that hasn't come out yet.
Okay, what is it?
It's called Way, Way Back. It's by some local guys. It's one of the sleeper hits of the season.
I'm going to get it. Way, Way Back. Okay, what else?
Then I'm going to say National Lampoon's Vacation and Stand By Me.
I am so with you. And the first one I'm going to watch this weekend, Garen Daly, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Now, Garen Daly is a film critic, the director and producer of the forthcoming documentary, The Orson Welles Complex. Thanks to all of you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. But we're not going away just yet. Stick around for a few more minutes, please, so we can let you know what you can do to help us here at WGBH.
Ever have one of those days where you had so much to do, you kind of wish there were two of you? Well, on Boston Public Radio, your wish has been granted, because when you support WGBH right now, other supporters will double the impact of your gift. There's a dollar-for-dollar match in effect. That means your gift of $10 a month becomes $20, your $100 gift becomes $200, and so on and so on. But it won't last long, so take advantage of this match and call 888-897-9424. The match also works online at WGBHnews.org.
Cool. Okay. Just number, Margaret.
Just the number. Okay.
Go. Oh, excuse me. Our number is 888-897-9424. You can give online at WGBHnews.org. I'm Jim Browdy. She's Marjorie Egan. We're asking you one last time to pitch in and help keep this program and others like it free and advisable. Kim, quickly tell us about the dollar-for-dollar match, please.
There is a dollar-for-dollar match. That means whatever you give in the next couple of minutes is going to be doubled. It is so important to take advantage of this in the next couple of minutes. Again, it stops at 2 p.m. If you're going to give, why would you not take advantage of this? It's such a practical choice. Let's say you give $20, that actually counts as $40. Let's say you give $100, that actually counts as $200. Now is the time to take advantage of this dollar-for-dollar match. There's a bunch of incentives, including that trip to Europe with Rick Steves. Let's get you the number and the online address where you can make this happen.
One last time, it is 877-947-9424, 888-897-9424, and WGBHnews.org.
NPR is good stories.
Stories rich in sound, voices of our country.
Stories about war and politics, about love and death, about old people and young all over the world.
NPR is about getting a story right and making a story matter. It's a promise we make to ourselves when we walk in the door every day, and it's a promise we make to you.
This is NPR.